We are in Exodus, the 25th chapter. From this point on, the rest of Exodus surrounds about the tabernacle completely. And so there's an awful lot of real, not only description here in the first part, but also how and who made the parts themselves. We probably will go through the other part of the chapters, like 37, 35, 36, 37, a little bit faster because it kind of re-describes everything all over again. So I won't have to go into detail of too much. But this particular chapter, chapter 25, it begins, and 26 begin about describing of something called, we call a tabernacle. And basically it's a tabernacle inside of a tabernacle. We will get to there as we go. So first we'll go to Exodus 25th chapter, and we'll have a reader.
The Lord said to Moshe, "Speak to the people of Israel, that they may take for me a contribution. From every man whose heart moves him, you shall receive the contribution for me. And this is the contribution that you shall receive from them: gold, silver, and bronze, blue and purple and scarlet yarns, and fine twined linen, goat's hair, tanned ram skins, goat skins, acacia wood, oil for the lamps, spices for the anointing oil, and for the fragrant incense, onyx stones and stones for setting, for the ephod and for the breastpiece. And let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell in their midst, exactly as I show you concerning the pattern of the tabernacle and of all its furniture, so you shall make it. They shall make an ark of acacia wood. 2 cubits and a half shall be its length, 1.5 cubits shall be its breadth, and 1.5 cubits its height. You shall overlay it with pure gold. Inside and outside shall you overlay it, and you shall make on it a molding of gold around it. You shall cast 4 rings of gold for it and put them on its 4 feet, 2 rings on the one side of it and 2 rings on the other side of it. You shall make poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. And you shall put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark to carry the ark by them. The poles shall remain in the rings of the ark. They shall not be taken from it. And you shall put into the ark the testimony that I shall give you. You shall make a mercy seat of pure gold. 2.5 cubits shall be its breadth, and 1.5 cubits its breadth. And you shall make 2 cherubim of gold. Of hammered work you shall make them on the 2 ends of the mercy seat. Make 1 cherub on the one end and 1 cherub on the other end. Of 1 piece with the mercy seat shall you make the cherubim on its 2 ends. The cherubim shall spread out their wings above, overshadowing the mercy seat with their wings, their faces one to another. Toward the mercy seat shall the faces of the cherubim be. And you shall put the mercy seat on top of the ark, and in the ark you shall put the testimony that I shall give you. There I will meet with you, and from above the mercy seat, and from between the 2 cherubim that are on the ark of the testimony, I will speak with you about all that I will give you in commandment for the people of Israel. You shall make a table of acacia wood. 2 cubits shall be its length, 1 cubit its breadth, and 1.5 cubits its length. And you shall overlay it with pure gold and make a molding of gold around it. And you shall make a rim around it, a handbreadth wide, and a molding of gold around the rim. And you shall make for it 4 rings of gold and fasten the rings to the 4 corners of its 4 legs. Close to the frame the rings shall lie as holders for the poles to carry the table. You shall make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. And the table shall be carried with these. And you shall make its plates and dishes for incense, and its flagons and bowls with which to pour drink offerings. You shall make them of pure gold. And you shall set the bread of the presence on the table before me regularly. You shall make a lampstand of pure gold. The lampstand shall be made of hammered work. Its base, its stem, its cups, its calyxes, and its flowers shall be of 1 piece with it. And there shall be six branches going out of its sides. Three branches of lampstand out of one side of it, and three branches of lampstand out the other side of it. Three cups made like almond blossoms, each with calyx and flower on one branch, and three cups made like almond blossoms, each with calyx and flower on the other branch. So for the six branches going out from the lampstand. And on the lampstand itself, there should be four cups made like almond blossoms, with their calyxes and flowers, and a calyx of one piece with it under each pair of the six branches going out from the lampstand. Their calyxes and their branches shall be of one piece with it, and the whole of it shall be a single piece of hammered work of pure gold. You shall make seven lamps for it, and the lamps shall be set up so as to give light on the space in front of it. Its tongs and their trays shall be of pure gold. It shall be made with all the utensils out of a talent of pure gold. And see that you make them after the pattern for them, which is being shown you on the mountain.
Any comments? We have one way down here.
I noticed it said mercy seat. Mercy seat. The mercy seat.
We will talk about the definition of what that really means.
Yeah. And
it's a fascinating definition.
And the measurements, I want to know why everything was explicitly measured. You know, everything had to be this,
okay,
this, and this.
I haven't talked to Moses to find out specifically why. All it said is that you must make it exactly like I showed you.
Okay.
So I guess it maybe has to, God has something to do with those measurements.
Yeah, I was just wondering.
I have
why
no
that.
Idea.
Oh, okay.
18 cubics and.
Yeah, I was just wondering why.
Those kind of things. I don't have any idea, except when we look at it and break it down, you'll find out why it's built that way for a reason, for a purpose. Okay? The mercy seat was a throne for someone to sit on. So it was not like a big, huge monstrosity thing of 40 feet, 50 feet. It was just a small little throne that sit on top of the ark. Okay? And that little table specifically measured for to hold bread, the show bread. Okay? Wasn't very big. It was pretty small. So there wasn't big, huge, giant loaves of bread. There wasn't 15 loaves of challah bread by this wide, that wide, that thick. Very small pieces of bread. Okay? For a reason, because they represented something for the house of Israel. Yes, Ellie?
Well, when the legions under the Roman Empire took over the temple and removed the last candlestick that they had, if we could get that back, we could examine it and we could know more.
Well, to a degree, but I think what, you know, Daniel gave extremely good.
Yes, he did.
On the very first menorah described in the Bible, it had no base. No base. It was made like a tree. And it was fastened into the ground. No base. Because it was dirt that the tabernacle was built upon, was laid upon dirt, so you could move it fast and quick. I think it's on the internet. If you ever find it down, I don't know what Jeff might have called it, but I think he did extremely good. I could not describe the first, menorah, if you want to call it that, as well as my son did. He describes why the almond flour was used. It's trying what those knots really were for and why. And it did a really, really good job on the thing. And so, you know, I can't take any more. I can't add anything to it. So I say, if you can, get on the internet and find out what that one is. I don't know if they got a picture of it, but I don't want to press my son to come up here and do it. But hey, I cannot perform it on that one. So if you really want to know what that kind of looks like, the very first one, yes.
I find it very interesting that he said the poles were never to be taken out of the loops that were made
Correct.
For them. And they didn't follow that always.
Yeah, they always had the poles remain in it no matter what. That and also the quote showbread table was also used for, not the incense, but the bowls were used for incense and was put on not there, but other places. So, yes, okay, one more question or statement?
seems like we've seen the word sanctuary before, but I'm not really sure.
Oh, okay.
Sanctuary.
What we're going to what we're describing here in the very first part of this chapter is what we call the inner tabernacle or the Holy of Holies. The first thing that Moses is supposed to build is the things associated with and connected to the Holy of Holies. The other tabernacle becomes bigger. It's described later in Exodus that becomes secondary, not primary. So we will go through those words too, because I've got them written down to define them. So any other question?
It's also very interesting in describing the mercy seat that God said that there is where he would commune with them above the mercy seat. Not just any place, okay, but there.
Technically speaking, the Hebrew word does not mean above. Okay. It means it's going to be on it.
Yeah, so he's going
he's going to be on it, not above it, in a sense, in Hebrew. Though sometimes translated as above, sometimes it's translated as off of. I'll speak to you off of the mercy seat. This is why I'm sitting down there. So more words will come off because I'm sitting here. Yes.
I just thought it was interesting that it says the way I showed you on the mount. And I was thinking maybe Moses walked the tabernacle while he was in that dark cloud for a long time.
Well, he was up there for 40 days, so he had to go in real detail. He had to probably write it all down, describe it, maybe even drew pictures of it. I don't know. But yeah. Well, actually, later on, God says, I will inspire who will make it for me. So there's certain men, you get later on the 36, 37th chapter, he names certain men to do certain things. And he says, I will give them the wisdom to do it according to how he wants it. The pattern or the design, however you want to use that word, is what the issue is all about. You keep it in the pattern or the design that I am telling you how to lay it out. And that's what we have. All right. Now remember, we're talking about the inner sanctuary, or we're talking about the Holy of Holies, okay? Where this is where the Ark of the Covenant was put, and that's where the mercy seat was put. And the showbread table was right next to that place. So those things are kind of important that God has listed in there. So first talk about, there's certain patterns here. Sometimes they hold together and sometimes they don't. I'm not quite sure why. But nonetheless, there's only three precious stone, or precious materials of metals that he talks about. First one is gold, second one is silver, and the third one is bronze. Now he made a statement that this must come from those who are willing to do it. It's not a commanded order, thou shalt. It's like, these are the ones that desire to do it. Okay, it's a little bit different. So not every Israelite did it. Only those who, he says, from everyone who gives it willingly with his heart. Now some people give something willingly, but not necessarily from the heart. They feel intimidated, so they give it. He don't want that one. It has to come from within the person themselves. Doesn't tell you how many, doesn't matter how many. It tells you, for far as we are talking about, the place where I want you to build, a place for me to dwell, I want these things surrounded about the place where I live, where I will dwell, and I want these people to want me to be there. That's about as simple as you can get it. All right? Later on, you'll find out an awful lot of people were involved in doing the thing. It's not just like a few handful. There was an awful lot. An awful lot of women did an awful lot of, quote, putting together the linen like crazy. And the color of linen, a color of threads rather, next one, he's talking about, it must be a purple and a blue rather, purple and scarlet. That's the certain threads that you're going to use. And fine linen, that is to make the linen and to weave the linen and to make it the way he wishes it. He also wants four things. Those are the four things for doing that part. And he's got goat hair, a ram, skin, and I'll cover this thing called badger skin, some of your translations, and using the acacia wood. Now, the badger is a very interesting terminology. We could translate it any way we want because we don't like the word badger. Well, true. But let's just understand a little bit about this word. It actually comes from Aramaic word. And the Aramaic word does not mean badger. It means skin that is blue. Skin that is tough and blue. And water resistant. Now, what animal do you think that would be? A what? Okay, type of dolphin, that is true. Now, the type of animal, there's another animal that's very, very close to it, and it's very abundant, and it's called in the Red Sea, and the Gulf of Aqaba, we call it today. It's a dungong. I don't know what that really means. I tried to look it up. But it basically, it's an animal that's got very hard skin. And it's blue in color. Now, remember, the blue, this particular thing called badger, is the thing that covers everything else. It's not weaved in and out, in and out. It covers everything else. And so they take this skin, and they are to put it upon the cover. Now, some people believe it's another kind of animal, a clean animal. But I wanted to take you to a verse that's very, very fascinating. I want you to go to Ezekiel, the 16th chapter. Ezekiel, the 16th chapter. This word that translated into fine linen or fine leather or something of that nature. It really has to do with the color blue. Interesting, of it by itself. And it says here now, in Ezekiel, the 16th chapter, verse 10. He's talking to the house of Israel, basically. I clothe thee also with embroidered work and shrouded thee with badger skin, and I will gird thee about with fine linen and cover thee with silk. That really means silk like we would think from a cocoon. That's where it came from. So now he says, use this word of this badger skin or this blue colored leather or skin. Actually, it's called skin, not leather. And it's used for covering. So it's what it is, I do not have a complete answer to you, but I try to figure out, and I quote have said the past, I'm going to justify myself, make sure it's done with a clean animal. But I can't figure out what clean animal could possibly meet those specifications. And here God uses a worm to make silk with and says, I use the worm to make silk. Do you eat worms? They're what they call God, they're an abomination, right? But he uses the worm and says, make silk out of it and I'll cover you with it. So it's not anti-silkworm here. It's just that God says you could take this and make it from this insect that produces a certain kind of cocoon. And you can, therefore, have silk. Now, I know ladies like silk, right? But basically, he's talking about how he's going to cover you and protect you. So we can debate about what this badger skin is or this fine leather is and how thick it was and why it was used to cover. It was not used to wear in the sense of you weave it in and out and bond it with the other skins. It was separate from all the other ones. The goat hair is used to make this. Later on, it shows you why they use goat hair. Very fascinating why what the goat hair was for. Goat hair has very unique properties. It expands and contracts. Expands and contracts depending upon the temperature. And it's very fascinating of it by itself. And anyway, it has to do with, odd enough, that goat's hair that's used to make, a big, huge blanket, right, for covering, is for the inner tabernacle. It's for the Holy of Holies. It's not for this big, huge outer one that surrounds the entire thing, just the sanctuary. that he is going to want them to make for him. And then he talks about, verse 7, about certain stones. He wants onyx stones, onyx and stones, two different kinds. He didn't tell exactly what kind. So other than just onyx. Later on, we'll probably find out more in detail what they are. Right now, we're just in chapter 25. About the ephod. An ephod is an outer garment that the priest, as well as high priest, wear. And it's open on the sides. There's no sleeves. It's like a big, huge, almost got like a poncho. But it does not go down the sides of the arms. It goes down below the thighs. So quite long. We put it down, probably down to the knees. And that's what it was. And on that, and on the breastplate is where you put the stones that he has in mind. And he'll tell later, we'll find out later what they are to be. And this thing about sanctuary, it comes from a very obvious word. Kadosh. It means clean. Or that which is holy. That was pure. That which is, I want a place that's nice and sanitary, you might say. I want a place that's clean. And I want them to make it for me, that I may dwell with them. That's the object of the Holy of Holies. It is that God dwells with them, not that they dwell with God. God dwells with them. And so that's the first thing he does. First thing we're reading about in this chapter is where he is going to be and where his furniture is going to look like and what he wants it to be made out of. And a lot of people like to give a lot of things. Give this to God, give this to God. Back then, did God just take anything the person gave? He specifically told him, this is what I want you to give me. I don't want anything else. But I got a piece of iron. You want iron? No, I don't want iron. Oh. I'm being playing words here. But I got a piece of aluminum. I don't want aluminum. I mean, we could joke about all that, but he says just those three things and nothing more. You remember the Egyptians gave them a tremendous amount of gold and silver in their silk, in their, we call them jewelry, which I think is not like little tiny things. I think they really guarded themselves big, huge hunks of silver plates and gold things and probably is none like us today. We'd be too expensive for us to even think about wearing those things. Especially women, they couldn't walk around it much. But nonetheless, that's what he wants. Now, verse 9, he says, according to all that I show you, that the pattern or the design of the tabernacle, not the outer tabernacle here yet, but this inner tabernacle, the tabernacle where he is going to dwell, make sure you do it in the design of that and in the design of the furnishings. Make sure what I just got to telling you to make it. Now, what did he ask them to make? Next verse. What's the first piece of furniture he tells them wants to make? He wants to make the ark. Now, this ark is made out of acacia wood. Don't ask me what it is. I don't know. I tried to research it down to find out what that really is, what kind of wood it is. But apparently it's very abundant in the Middle East, but not here. And then they are to, when they put it all together, they are to cover the inside and the outside completely with gold. So you melt the gold down, you thin it out, and you put it on top of the inside and outside. And then you put these these four rings on the corners. Now, talk about this height of this thing. It says that the length was 45 inches. How wide is 45 inches? It's a little over a yard. Okay. Well, I think this, I don't know, this may be 47. Could be a good idea. And on this thing, of course, there's going to be a cherubim. And we'll talk about that. A cherubim here. So there's someone sitting right here in the middle. But we'll talk about that later because that's actually not the ark. Now on this ark, he wants certain things to be done. By the way, it's 45 inches long, 27 inches wide and 27 inches off the floor, which means it's someplace you sit down. He's sitting on a throne, put it this way. Going to be sitting on a throne. Now, maybe he's long, got long legs. I don't know. A big man, a big guy. But put that aside. And after you overlay it with inside gold, and you put those two rings on, he says on the four corners. Now, what that means is, like, there is a ring on this corner, and there's a ring on this corner, and there's a ring on this corner, and a ring on this corner, and there's a pole on both sides. Now, the reason for it is, like, I don't think you've seen it on sometimes on television or a documentary, where there's a very important person, and she is riding on top, and she's being carried. The people carrying it are on the outside, and they're carrying it, right? In order for that person that's in the middle is seen by everybody, right, as it's being carried. And so, and they have remained there. And then the interesting thing about this, the arc, the length of those poles, when they put it into, if I remember correctly, I could be wrong, at least either read about it or someone told me about it, I don't know what. When Solomon built the tabernacle, or built the temple, that inner temple, inner sanctuary, was exactly the same measurements as the inner sanctuary was, or the Holy Holy was, and the Ark of the Covenant was in it, and the poles stuck out. And so you can see the little poles through the curtains. They're sticking out. So they're pretty long. So it was not easily seen. I don't know exactly how they arranged it, so I'm not a person there to tell you how. But, you know, when we look at this, we see something very fascinating about it. Because this inner sanctuary is the first thing that God wanted to be done. And the first machine piece, materially, I mean, the first thing he wanted made was the ark. And laid with gold. And the next thing, what do you want to do it? Now he says, I'm going to give you the testimonies. Some of you, it is actually in Hebrew, that word really means, I'm going to give the witness. I'm going to give you a witness, and I want you to put it inside of it. And that basically means that what we call the Ten Commandments, or the Ten Words. They were placed inside of it. So you can imagine that the tablets were not huge monstrosity thing, but they could fit in there, along with a few other things. How they fit, I don't know. What shape they were, I don't know. I wasn't there. No one knows what's there. They just try to figure it. You couldn't have made them square, too boring. Some people got all sorts of different kind of designs about the two tablets of stone. It doesn't matter. Let's see, where am I at now? Verse 15. Oh, now, okay, the ring shall not be taken out. And you put in the testimony or the witness that I'm going to give you, we put inside of it. By the way, that word witness is a very fascinating thing. It does mean witness. And it also comes from another Hebrew word or a verb, meaning this is the evidence of something. So witness is the evidence of something. And what it breaks down to one more thing, it's called a duplicate, or something that repeats itself, or something that returns back to. So there was, Daisy is the duplicate, meaning there was probably two sets. I'm thinking that, I don't know, I have no idea, because Moses came down with two tablets, and so you have this two pieces of evidence that goes into this ark. That's my assumption, what it means. I don't know for sure. Now, the mercy seat is fascinating. Now, he gives the mercy seat and tells you how long it is and how wide it is. Same exact measurements of the ark. Doesn't tell you how thick it is, though, does he? Well, see, it's made of pure gold. Now, I don't know if it's solid gold Or it was wrapped in acacia. It looks like it's solid gold. Doesn't say it made out of gold. I imagine it was pretty heavy. Even if it was, you know, half inch thick, it's pretty heavy. for my thinking, you know. So it would take a lot of men to put that thing in its place. But let's talk about the mercy seat. I know it's well used. I thought it was very fascinating that why it's called the mercy seat. Now, the mercy seat is going to cover something. Because the word seat means that which covers. A lid that covers. So the lid that covers is going to cover the witnesses. All right? And we use this terminology on Yom Kippurim. There's a covering, a covering, going over that the seat is, and the mercy. What do you think mercy means? Well, just give yourself a second thought. There is something that takes place on the Day of Atonement. What takes place on that day? Okay. Restoration. A covering goes over sins, transgressions, and iniquities. Correct? They're not seen anymore. They're not acknowledged by God anymore. And so this mercy seat or this covering, the covering of something, covering which sometimes takes the covering of blood in order to cover up the sins, transgression, and iniquity, God had that established in the very, very beginning before anything else. He's telling Moses, make sure you designed this exactly as I have shown you on the mountain. Don't rearrange it. Don't do it any differently. Make sure it is designed in this fashion and this form. So we have the creator of heaven and earth. Remember that Yeshua had to walk through, according to the book of Hebrews, right? Remember Hebrews? He had to walk through the Holy of Holies. All right? And it cost him his life, right? But what is it benefit for you and me? No. It says there in Hebrews, we get to walk into that place. We get to walk into that place where he walked into because he was not a Levite, nor was he a high priest. He was of the tribe of Judah. Anybody walks through there, it's a death sentence. Very fascinating approach that in the very beginning, this is what God had in mind. In the very beginning now, that evidence doesn't come through until thousands of years later. And sometimes we think, oh, this is something gorgeous. Well, yes, it is. And the reason why I had the poles was so they could pick it up and move it. What is that picture? Where is God's throne? In heaven. How does it move? On its own. Well, we'll talk about how it's on its own in a minute. But you know, there's four living creatures around about that throne, right? This is also described, I think, in the book of Ezekiel, if I'm not wrong. Very similar description. And it says a wheel within its wheel. And it goes wherever it wants to go. It doesn't turn, it just goes. Okay, a very fascinating when you start to think about that for a moment, because there are two cherubs on the side of that throne. What is their function? To move. They got wings to move. They don't move until that who sits on the throne says, I want to go someplace, and those wings start moving the throne. It's not just a stationary thing that never moves, and those golden eagle, golden cherubs are not there just to look pretty. God didn't design his throne to look pretty only. He designed his throne to be functional, workable, and do its job. These cherubs are around the mercy seat. They're on top of, sitting with, and joined with the Creator of heaven and earth and His forgiveness. They don't move until He tells them to move. When do they move? They go. He said, do they ask you, but do they go left, right, up, down? Look at all these wings that makes them move at certain places. And they open them up and they move. So no, they're always covered. Well, they got four of them. Right? Move. Why so many wings? To go four different directions. Anytime you want without turning. Like the wheel in a wheel. Alright? It's kind of God's showing us different things, different aspects about His throne. And I think here in this 25th chapter is telling us exactly why He designed it the way He designed it. We get to see something very important. So my question to you is, and since the mercy seat is a place of atonement, right? It's the throne of atonement. It's the throne of Kippurim. It's the throne of I don't see your sins anymore because you know where they're at. They're in this ark and my seat's sitting on top of the ark. The witness is against you right beneath me. And guess what? I don't see them. It's a picture of Him saying, I don't see the sins, the transgressions, and iniquities which you have done. Though their witness is still there, I'm on top of it. Isn't that a fascinating thought? That's why there's so much hope. When you look at the picture here, of especially the 25th chapter here, about this particular throne He is describing and wants it done. What does cherub mean? You have cherubim. I'm sorry, what?
Are they messengers
as well? No. Cherubs are specifically spelled out for a reason, and they do a function. Throughout the Bible, there's I got written down here, at least 60 places in the Bible where that is written. The cherub or cherubim is written. Where did I put my notes? Oh, right there in front of me. It's about 60 places in the Bible. And in the book of Ezekiel, it's got it 15 times. The book of Exodus is 10 times. So the cherubs have something. But where do the cherubs first show up? Do you remember?
Did they come and give coals on someone's mouth? Can you hear me?
Yes. No, that's not described yet here.
Oh.
Way back in time. In the beginning. In the beginning. Bereshit. And the garden. And there were two cherubims with what? Swords in their hand. That's where the cherubim comes up. So a function of the cherubim is something not just distinctly about any angel, but specific function of that angel. And here we see them here and here, and later on we see the book of Ezekiel, cherubims are always there. They're drawing cherubims. They're not drawing angels. They're drawing cherubims. What are they doing? They're looking at, and it's looking at something. In a sense, they are, best way I can describe them, they are guards. Or they're the ones that watch very carefully what's going on. They're the ones that are a hedge that's around something. They're the one not protecting the Father. They're there with Him. They're joined with Him. They function with Him. And these two cherubs are here, are functioning Him. And they're guarding something. What are they guarding?
The way of mercy.
The witness beneath, and they protect it. They guard it. It doesn't get out. So I look at these things and I say, okay, cherubims have a different function than just, quote, an angel or, quote, an archangel. They seem to have a function to do something. They seem to be functioning to either to guard something and or to protect something like the garden, can't get back in the Garden of Eden. Okay, swords of fire, can't get back inside. Probably they also will fight, I don't know. I'm not, probably, who's for sure, they probably are there where they do fight.
But they have all the eyes on them?
No. Cherubim, I think the cherubims are the ones that you see, that I've had so far been described, seem to have the ones with wings.
Fire.
They seem to have the ones that seem to have wings. No, the other angels don't seem to have wings. We have angels that look like horses, remember? You remember the chariots? Daniel, we'll reach into it pretty soon. But there was Elijah. Anywhere, he says, don't be afraid. And open up. God opened his eyes. He saw legions of chariots with horses and angels on it. It just tells you what the function they do. What are horses designed for? War. Okay. So we see different pictures of different ones. I know that, you know, we have this stupid thing on, stupid pagan thing that we, that the world celebrates in February. And there's a little stupid thing called a Cupid. Yeah. The boat here. Someone's in love. That's not what they do. Yes.
So I have a question. So Lucifer was an archangel? Or
who?
Lucifer?
Yes,
an archangel. He was an archangel.
Yeah.
But it was only one.
Oh, no. I think there are four of them, I think, but not mistaken. There are four. It seems like there are only four. It could be wrong about them, but that's all I found out in Scripture. There's probably four of them. Because you got these four creatures around the throne itself. They are four creatures that have tremendous amount of power. When you go to the book of Revelations, each one of those creatures, one comes from throne and goes to John and says, I'm going to show you. And he goes back. The other one goes to John and says, I'm going to show you this. The first four horsemen of Revelations, it's those four creatures who are responsible for carrying out those four functions. That's their job. One looked like a man, one looked like a lion, one looked like a what?
Air,
a bird, yeah, and what was the fourth one? Well, I said man.
Ox, eagle.
Ox, okay. But they're just symbolism of not what they look like, but what they do.
Their function.
Yes.
So, Michael, the archangel, is one of the ones that are in the four.
I'm assuming that. They didn't name him. Right. I don't know.
I'm just curious.
I know that Michael is definitely going to go to war. That's the only thing I can tell you about Michael. He's going to go to war. He also went to war before in the book of Daniel. Was it, Jeff? I think it was. Where he actually went to war before. And in order that Daniel, that Gabriel, could get the message to Daniel. But Gabriel was at war with another archangel. And so Michael had to come and go to war against that one so Gabriel could give Daniel the information he needed to know. And he said, I would have came sooner, but I was stopped. I started coming. It took 21 days for him to get there.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what?
They're different from Michael and... I don't understand.
My answer to you is I think Michael is an archangel. There's no answer buts about it. He had the massive army with him. That book of Revelation tells you that. He's got a massive army with him. So he is one who's in charge of, has jurisdiction over a lot of power. He has enough power at that particular point in time, not because he was weak ever, because now he's got the authority to destroy the devil. I'm sorry, what?
A legion.
Oh, how I don't know. Yeah. Well, God has legions of myriads. The myriads and myriads of people. Or angels.
These are all created in the beginning.
That's what it says there in Ezekiel somewhere? No. Isaiah somewhere. Anyway. Let's go on here. I got to get this thing. It's only 2:30 and I'm only on page 4. All right, go to page 5. The next thing we hear is that you are to make a table Verse 23. Now you make a table. And this table also is a certain size. It's 26 inches by 18 by 27, same height as the ark. Okay? And it's 18 inches, it's narrower, but it's 3 feet wide. And this is to use for more than just one thing, but primarily going down is for what's called the showbread, or for the incense. They put the incense on there when they go into the Holy of Holies. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, just one this little note on the cherubim. The interesting thing Lexicon's come up with is the cognate from Syrian, meaning cherubu is to be gracious, to bless, to adore.
Yeah, so. I'll go along with that one. And they're always there. Of course, I don't know how they were blessing and exhorting at the Garden of Eden with swords and fire, but so they actually could do probably a combination of several different things. Interesting, though, nonetheless.
Extravagant, like you know how some kings make these big old chairs and all these.
I haven't got the slightest idea. I imagine it was extremely elaborate.
It was? You mean just the artwork itself?
Yes, extremely elaborate.
Okay, yeah, yeah. I could see that. But I mean, it wasn't big and
honking. I don't think it was abstract art at all. I think it was the art because God told this guy, I'm going to want you to make this. I'll tell him exactly how to make that archangel.
I mean, it just wasn't some big monstrosity, you know? It was fine and beautiful.
Well, I imagine it was pretty high. I don't know how high.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I haven't got the slightest idea. What's next? On this table, I had to have four rings on it on each one of the corners so it could be carried. I'm assuming, but not say so, they probably all sorts remain there permanently. But doesn't say that. And these are to be overlaid with gold, the poles overlaid with gold, and they put into the ring, and that's how you carried it back and forth or wherever you had to go. And then they make some other things. Verse 29. They make dishes, pans, pitchers, bowls for pouring. And to make them out of aluminum. Teflon-coated cast iron. Out of pure gold. Imagine they're pretty heavy. I don't think they're big monstrosity things. I think they were actually a man, because each man could carry his own bowl. It wasn't like he was so big he had to hang on both hands. He could carry it with one hand. And we'll find out later on when certain ones rebelled against Aaron, what happened to that? Actually, I think it was brass they had there, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, the gold was melted down or used for something else. They did not restore them back. Okay, and it's called showbread. What's showbread? Is the bread to what? What are you supposed to show?
The tribe. The head of the tribe.
A bunch of
hollow
bread? Why is it that God wanted a table 3 feet long and wanted, and later on it says 12 loaves of bread? Why did he want that every single Shabbat? Every Shabbat, they brought him in. What did he want to see? They're for him to see, right? You're showing something to God. God's not showing something to you. Because that's his tabernacle, his place, his dwelling place. Why would he want that?
To remind him.
A what?
To remind him that those are
to remind him?
Yeah, be generous. What's it, 12?
Jeff? Got an idea?
The body of Israel.
Did you say 12 loaves?
body? Yeah, 12. There's 12. Well, later on in Scripture it says 12. But not right here at this point in time. We're just driving the furniture that's required. I'm sorry, you had to speak louder.
They represent each tribe.
That's what Jeff was saying. And since each tribe was responsible bringing one loaf of bread, they are showing God what God wants to see. What is the function? Now it says it gets on and the high priest gets to eat it and the priest gets to eat it. What is it showing God? Or what is God showing them? Yes. Presence of each tribe. What is each tribe supposed to do?
They take down a set of things. They assemble and reassemble. They move. Right?
Interesting, right? It's a good question, I think.
Yeah.
Help! I need help! Show me what it means. I have no disagreement with what Jeff said. I think the bread shows how God has shown them that He has provided something for them. And bread always represents what? Food and life. That's what lachem. It's lachem. The word is lachem. And the other word is face. And basically the word face means to turn toward or turn in that direction. All right? So the face of the bread is turning toward God, and God's seeing, okay, you see those 12? They're producing. What if one of them didn't bring their loaf of bread? Uh-oh, shows God that one's not doing what He wanted them to do. What happens? Well, you know, make a long story short, when Israel tore apart and Jacob tore apart, I don't think there very much bread was shown there at the show bread, because even during the time of just Judah only there and Israel's gone, there could not have 12 loaves there. Judah was supposed to bring theirs, one loaf for their tribe. What happened to the tribe of Issachar? Didn't show up. What about Zebulun? It didn't show up. What about Simeon? It didn't show up. So it's seven showing something to God. Here's my table. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2. Ooh, it's not good news, is it? That's just something to think about. All right, that's all. I have to leave that up in the air for anybody else to think about. Let's go to this, the lamp and light. Verse 31. Had a question? Verse 30, rather. Oh, God. 31. It's called the menorah. And it starts with the mem because it means the word from. Or it also can mean on. It's either from or on. And the other part of it is lamp. Okay, in Hebrew, it's called this phrase of pure gold. And it says the ha mug. Va-or. Va-mach, va-or. Which means the lamp and light. So he says, I want you to make the lamp and light. So you make a lamp for something, it means for the light. Now as we keep on going down this word, we find out it also means something that if you have a lamp, something is designed to do one thing. Something's going to beam from it. Obviously, we're talking about light being beamed from it. But we get just in this word, breaking it down. And it's very fascinating. One more breakdown on it. It means that which is broken apart. So here we have a lamp and we have light. And the object of the lamp, and it's got to be seven branches, is to break something apart or separate something. And what's it going to separate? The light. We also know that it means it's the light that God sees. These are the eyes of God that looks upon the house of Israel. We have it back there on that wall. Well, the greater son is holding something in his right hand and his left hand. And he is the one that is doing the job of a high priest. Because this is the function of a high priest, take care of the menorah. Make sure it's got plenty of oil, make sure it's got plenty of light. And if one of the lamps does not work well, he says, I'm going to remove you and put another one there. That tells you something about so-called menorah with seven lamps. That God is the one that designed it. He's the one that lets us to know what he is trying, or not trying, but he is showing us. And they had to make individual lamps and join them together so there will be seven lamps dividing or separating the light. That's the simplicity of that word. And if it's not functioning right, God will remove. He will remove one of them and place it with something else. Yes.
He's in the middle.
Doesn't say that. He says in the midst of it. He's not saying he's in the middle of it. He holds and controls all seven. He controls all seven.
Oh, so there's.
He's the one that moves the candle and puts another one, or moves the stick, the thing that holds the burning thumb. He removes that and puts another one in place. He said he would do that.
Oh, all right.
The tradition, this is my personal opinion, Richard Age's personal opinion, only personal opinion, doesn't matter. I don't ever have never pictured the middle one representing the Messiah. Nothing in the Bible I've seen ever comes close to that. It always comes to close to being the eyes of God. This is how God sees. How he sees, if the lamp doesn't work, he puts a new one there. Now you have seven lamps. Yes. That's my personal opinion. You can ignore it.
Well, the reason I think you see some of that confusion is because a lot of people confuse the nine-branched Hanukkah, which has a shamash, a servant candle, if you will, with the menorah, which only has a seven. And so they presume that they're literally imposed upon one another, but they're not the same thing.
The only thing I do not know historically, from biblical terminology, I don't know where this Hanukkah came from biblically. I'm not saying it could not have been, but I don't know where I could find it biblically. And so I'm kind of limited to where I see what is written. Now, I'm not objecting to, be careful what I'm saying, I'm not objecting to this seven or eight or nine candlestick thing. That's not the issue for me. I know that terminology is true, came from that system. But when it comes to the seven, the Son of God is in control of each one of those. Even the middle one, he can remove and put a new one there. He's, after all, the Son of God.
Those are the seven churches, right? With the seven spirits?
Yeah, seven spirits, or seven eyes, so called seven eyes in Zechariah? I can't remember. Anyway. So anyway, we go on to this thing, and we find out that these six branches shall come out of its side. So you got one main one, that's what everybody thinks is the Messiah. No, you start there, and there are six that come out from the side. And everybody assumes, because it doesn't say that, that all the light comes from the center one and goes out. Well, they could. I don't know. Doesn't say. That's good. Sounds good. Sounds great. Okay. Fine. I don't know. I'm just saying he's describing three more coming out and doing a certain. By the way, the original one didn't come in a curve. It's like the almond tree. Why do they use the almond tree? The branches of the almond tree do not curve. They're straight. Straight up. Their branches, they don't loop. They're straight up. And so it's kind of interesting when you look at it from that point of view. But it's not that important. Now, each one of these lamps has four bowls, and they are to carry basically oil. Oil, a bowl, and a bowl, and a bowl. And each one had four of them, and they poured oil into that so the oil can go up into the, quote, the wick that was there. What wick they used, I don't know. Doesn't matter. I don't know that much. And anyway, nonetheless, the priesthood was make sure that each one of those bowls had oil in it. That oil in it. And they are also take care of the wick, make sure it will always be burning. But that's a function of the high priest. That's a function of the Messiah, the high priest, who's got something in his right hand and something in his left hand. You've got to pay attention to that myself, personally speaking. All right. Hey, I'm almost finished. The lamp and the lights. Basically what that boils down to. Seven lamps, one light. Now they're all connected together. I think that's probably it. Of course, they're made of pure gold. Their little trays are to be made of pure gold. And then verse 40. Here comes this word from the individual or the being that Moses is talking to. And see to it that thou make them according to the pattern which was shown to you on the mountain. He's not just talking now about the furniture, but the details of every one of them. And remember, he's up there for 40 days and 40 nights. One of the days I'll talk about that too, but not today. So we got some basic definitions, right? So as we keep on going, we'll find out some basic definitions of other things that are associated with the outer tabernacle. Also definitions of certain things that the high priest was to wear and what that has a meaning to in relationship to where God is at. Where God is going to say, I want to dwell amongst you, and this is how you are to present yourself before me, you high priest and people of Israel. God's kind of what you might people think, picky. Well, after all, he is the creator. He can do what he wants to do, right?